Hmm?
I rip into the meat, chewing through the tough, salted meat, taking the edge off my hunger but making me incredibly parched. Unfortunately, I have only gritty water to look forward to when we reach our destination, and a date with someone who'll probably eat me. Noev transfers both reins into one hand and pulls a leather roll from the pocket of her pants, unraveling it. She plucks out a smoke stick and waves it in my direction. "Thought you gave that up?" I ask, reaching into my pocket for my fire weld. Well, Khan's old fire weld I stole when I was young, imagining I'd need it one day. Or, more to the point, wishing. Hoping. Wasted hopes they were. "Over 30 times since you last sat in that seat, but I've decided I quite enjoy it." I smile, flicking the metal lid, using the dancing flame to singe the end of her death stick. She draws on it, blowing a swath of sweet smoke that gets lost amongst the fog while I polish off my meat strip to the tune of our trundling cart. "Why are you here, Veya?" Noev asks, between deep drags. "Left something important in Gor," I say, removing a glove to pick the meat from between my teeth. "How long ago?" I think back to the moment just after the blank in my head. The inky smudge that somehow feels both void and unfathomably hefty. "Over 100 phases?" Noev muses, taking another deep pull of her stick, blowing a plume of smoke that soils my next breath with the overly sweet residue of whatever herb she's wafting. "And where did you leave this thing?" "Tossed it down the rubbish chute." I thread my hand back in my glove and cross my arms over my chest, settling deeper into the cold wooden seat. Frowning, I try to wiggle my ass into a more comfortable position. Given how much Noev charges for crossings, I'm surprised the seats still have no padding. Next time, I'm packing a cushion rather than two useless forks I haven't even looked at since I left Dom. Suddenly registering the void of silence beside me, I glance right, straight into Noev's wide gray eyes, the smoke stick hanging from her pinched fingers, a curl of ash threatening to blow away on the next whirl of wind. "What's wrong?" "There's a velvet trog at the bottom of the rubbish chutes in Gor, Veya." "Oh, that." I reach into my pocket for another piece of meat, inspecting both ends, picking the stumpier one to gnaw on. "Unfortunate, isn't it?" "You're not intending to confront her?" "Course I am. How else am I going to get the damn thing back?" I mutter through the leathery mouthful. "She's obsessed with jewelry, correct?"
"From what I've heard, yes."
"Wonderful," I say, swallowing, biting off another big chunk. "Hope she hasn't eaten my bangle, otherwise this'll be for naught. Especially since there's next to no chance of me finding Elowyn's diary without this particular piece of jewelry I stupidly decided to part with many phases ago, tossing it down the chute like some cursed trinket. Certain it had something to do with the reason I had a blank spot the size of 30 Aurora cycles smudged in my mind. Seemed like a good idea at the time. Now it might cost me my life before I get to do something grand and heroic with it."
"You paid for a return trip," Noev says, and I shrug.
"If I die, keep the change." I wiggle in my seat again, trying to find a more comfortable position while I stuff my mouth full of meat. Perhaps use it to invest in some creator's damn padding.
Diary entry. Elowyn Nevan. Age 18 phases. 5,039 phases after stone. It's been 7 slumbers since I saw him last. Since I heard him play Ma and Pa's song, dropped my shield like a battle-weary soldier, cried in his arms until I finally drifted off, then woke wrapped in Slatra's tail. Though there's still a fresh meal set by the door each slumber, accompanied by a small stone carving I add to my growing collection of pint-sized pity dragons I want to toss against the wall, there's no song. No hymn. Every time I walk around the corner and find the hole empty, I'm weighed down by another brick of humiliation I throw into my punches, my kicks. Vaya says I'm improving. If that's what I get for trying to beat the shit out of this feeling, I'll take it.
Vaya. Chapter 64. Tucked in one of the quieter wind tunnels, I stuff my head through the hole in the wall and peer down the rubbish chute, face twisting at the sour reek wafting up from the Trog's lair. I sigh, pull my head back, and unravel a length of rope from where it's bound around my shoulders, attaching the large metal hook to the chute's lip. I toss the rope down the hole, hoping it's long enough to skim the top of whatever rubbish pile I'm about to become uncomfortably familiar with. Vaya, you know what? I mutter to myself. You're marvelous, but you really screwed yourself with this one. In the future, I intend to make much better decisions. Preferably ones that don't land me in one of Gore's rubbish chutes, preparing to have a conversation with a creature that nests somewhere near the top of the food chain. With another sigh, I give the rope a tug, then climb into the hole feet first, slowly lowering myself down the chute's lengthy throat toward a blue glow radiating from below. The warming air thickens with the stench of sour, rotten things, and the underside of my tongue tingles. If I vomit all over my leathers, the Trog won't take me seriously. I swallow a wad of bile, tipping my head back while I try to keep it down. Next time life throws me a magical bangle, I'm just going to put it in my jewelry box, wherever it is. Reaching the opening, I ease down a touch farther, dangling midair above a pile of reeking trash. Fuck me, I mutter, casting my wide-eyed gaze around the large cavern, taking in the ceiling, a splintered mess of stalactites. From their tapered tips hang long, blue, dripping strings that are draped across the ceiling like the threads of a web, igniting Gore's refuse in a bold glow. Mountains of it. I quirk a brow, noticing how there are separate, very organized piles for things. Old chairs, clothing, footwear, plates, glass, everything. She'd work wonders in my sleep suite. My attention snags on a shimmery pile in the distance. A stack of glinting goods. Maybe I won't have to confront the Trog after all. I just have to spend the rest of my life hunting through that pile, silently, while living off trash to sustain myself. I sigh. This entire plan is flawed, and I'm going to die a horrible death. A dense thump attacks me from above, and I glance up, struck with the terrible realization that something is currently plummeting down the chute above me. The mostly abandoned chute. Mid-slumber. Probably a dead body. Groaning, I loosen my grip on the rope and plunge toward the pile of trash. Colliding with the clanking, slushy mound, I roll sideways, tumbling groundward, simultaneously coating myself in an oily fluid I refuse to acknowledge. I clamber to the ground, plucking fruit peels off my tunic and eggshells from my hair, tiptoeing along the frail pathway threaded between the mounds, pointing myself in the direction of the glinting treasure pile I saw in the distance. I'm struck with the sound of something chewing, of popping, crunching, slurping sounds that chill me to the bone. I pause for a moment, listen, then soften my steps, moving closer to the pile of mostly broken chairs and peeking around the edge of it. My blood chills. Crouched on a nest of ramshackle garbage is the velvet trog, bony knees up around her fiercely tapered ears as she brings a piece of chair to her lipless mouth, wraps her maw around it, and bites. More popping, cracking, splintering sounds, her second set of arms preening her oil-slicked hair that falls about her bony body, coiled around her limbs like a nest. For a moment, all I can do is watch, morbidly transfixed. She must be 3 times the size of me, her blue velvety skin so at odds with the holes in her 4 palms, round gapes of flesh that glow with the same fluorescence as the threads draped across the ceiling. Her numerous black beady eyes narrow on the piece of chair before she stuffs the rest in her mouth, moaning with satiated delight. Something glints in my peripheral, my gaze latching onto the silver, gem-encrusted bangle sitting atop her head like a tiny crown. My silver, gem-encrusted bangle. Damn it. Guess she likes it more than I did. She's certainly looking after it more. Definitely getting eaten. Sighing, I grab a 3-legged chair from the pile and drag it across the rough stone floor that's surprisingly clean, aside from the odd splat of fluorescent goo, stepping into the small patch of empty space before the trog's nest of hair and trash. The creature goes eerily still, a shard of pottery poised halfway to her mouth. I place the chair down and perch upon it, as the trog cocks her head to the side, lowering the shard, her many eyes blinking at me. You're a brave little morsel, planting yourself before me like a mid-slumber snack. Internally, I quiver so much I swear my bones rattle. You have something that used to be mine, I say with a loose shrug. Those beady eyes narrow further. What is it? My bangle. I point to where it's resting atop her head, stringy bits of hair curled around its circumference and binding it in place. I want it back. She releases a shrill cackle that ends as abruptly as it began, cutting me through with a predatory leer. She's a bossy little morsel. Guess that was a little bossy. Apologies. I would like it back, please. That's a good morsel. She raises a hand, her knobbly finger reminding me of the stalactites hanging from the ceiling. Silence stretches as she unweaves the piece of jewelry from her head, one limp, oily strand at a time. My heart pumping hard and fast. Can it really be this easy? You know, she says in her odd, scratchy voice that makes me battle another full-body shudder. Things have memories. Really? Pretending to be interested is hard while I'm quietly begging she doesn't flick the circlet of silver into the air, then swallow it down in a single gulp. She nods, hanging the bangle on the tip of her tapered nail, bringing it to her flat, slit nose, all her lids growing heavy as she draws a deep whiff. Internally, I wince, beginning to see where this is going. Smells good, does it? Clever, clever little morsel. I am clever, most of the time. This entire situation puts an unfortunate chink in my armor. Splaying a hand, she plugs her thumb and pointer finger into one of the gaping holes in her palms. Pinching, she extracts a fluorescent string that emerges with a thick, gluey secretion, making me want to hurl. The richer the memory,
the more of this I make. I see.
She keeps pulling until there's a lengthy coil of the substance bound on the ground before her, throwing light up at the underside of her honed chin. The last of the threads slurps free of her palm hole, flopping before her.
"Isn't my palace pretty?" she preens, tossing her arms wide.
I lift my gaze to the ceiling, taking the space in with a whole new, gut-twisting appreciation, a wad of stretchy wetness dripping onto my cheek from what I suspect is a recently strung thread. It's an effort not to loosen my guts all over the floor. "Very pretty. Wish I could secrete like that."
"Fucking glad I can't." "This right here," she says, tapping a nail upon my gem-encrusted bangle. "I've been saving it for a special occasion."
She brings it to her nose and draws a long, haunting whiff, groaning.
"I can tell it's going to be tasty."
Unfortunate. I was hoping I wouldn't have to part with what I currently have stuffed in my pocket. I reach in, pulling out a loop of braided colk leather heavy with a round of black dragon scale carved to represent the pronged face of Pa's vicious saber scythe. "What about a trade?" The trog's head snaps to the side, like her neck just popped a bone.
"Trade, you say? What's that my little morsel has in her bony hand?"
"It was Ma's Malmer," I say, dangling it before me. "Gifted from my pa, the late King Ostern Vagor."
"And how did you obtain it? Did my little morsel steal it?"
She draws a whiff of the air.
"Smells stolen."
"It is. I stole it from his sleep suite when I was 17. Figured if he noticed, his hate toward me would feel at least a tiny bit justified. He didn't. The trog's head snaps the other way. The motion so unnatural looking, I'm equally as repulsed as I am concerned for her safety. She sniffs again, long and hard, and I decide her lungs are somehow bigger than her willowy body suggests.
"This is richer, little morsel."
She waves the bangle at me, her face carving into the most terrifying smile I've ever seen.
"Just..."
I grind my teeth together, surprised they don't shatter. "You can also have the catch chain on the bangle. I don't need that."
"I think..."
Her chest shakes with a haunting shriek that slowly tapers off before she garnishes me with a gleeful stare.
"Deal."
A warm, prickly wave of relief washes over me. She plucks the chain free before throwing me the bangle. I catch it, my three-legged chair toppling onto the ground without my weight keeping it vertical. I toss the Malmer at her, and she snags it by the string, dangles it from her wrist, then flicks the tiny chain into her mouth like a grain of sand. Shrill crunching ensues, and I picture teeth cracking. Her eyes widen so much, I think they might all pop out of her head and pepper the pile of memory excrement coiled on the ground by her nest. She stops mid-chew, releasing another clamorous laugh.
"Oh, you are a naughty little morsel, aren't you?"
Ice snaps through my veins. I clamp the bangle around my wrist. "Don't remember using it. Just remember what it does."
"Interesting," she murmurs,
followed by another jarring tip of her head while she chews.
Crunch, crunch, crunch. "Does my little morsel want to know its secrets?"
"Pass," I say, watching her pull a thread from one of her right palms, so much brighter than any other draped across the cavern ceiling. Definite. Pass. Such pretty, pretty secrets, she purrs, her words pinching my nerves. Think it's time I get the fuck out of here. Shaking off the tension climbing my spine, I drag my chair back to the pile, passing her a dubious stare. You're not going to eat me on my way out, are you? Hard to say, but I think she frowns. Course not, little morsel. I don't eat those I strike bargains with. Only the ones I don't. And how many have you struck bargains with? Still dragging the bright thread from her palm, she rubs her chin with a spare hand, appearing to think long and hard. Six, she announces, lifting Paz Melmer to her nose and drawing another deep sniff. Including you. Right. I glance at the steadily growing pile of slurpy string glowing brighter than a moonplume egg. Lucky me. I give her a wave she doesn't appear to notice, too transfixed on her task. Or maybe she does and she just doesn't care. Probably the latter. I move around the piles of trash, arm heavy with the bangle I once won from a deeply troubled mind weft who claimed she knew how to speak the language of ether. That she'd studied the Book of Void in length and knew the secret to our insignificant existence. She told me the bangle would serve me in two ways, that both would be painful but necessary. Don't remember the first, so can't speak for that. Probably won't want to remember the second, either.
Diary entry. Elowin Nevan. Age, 18 phases. 5,039 phases after stone. He came back. He didn't explain why he'd left. Nor did I ask, nor admit how much I'd missed him. Too much. Like one of my ribs had been snapped free, leaving an ache right over my heart. He had a fresh scar on his arm, the one he uses to strum. He was also wearing a necklace, a long, braided piece of leather attached to a flat, circular pendant. A silver moon plume and a reddish-black saber scythe bound together, their jagged and sweeping bits fitting against each other. From what I understand, only one Sabersythe has silver scales, and she lives in Gondor. Nobody has been able to get close enough to climb on her back and attempt to tame her, and honestly, I hope they never do. I ate my meal in silence, watching Khan play his instrument with that pendant hanging proudly against his chest. Wondering, I wanted to touch it, weigh it in my palm, ask him where it came from. All things that are absolutely none of my business. If he caught me looking at it, he didn't let on or even lift his stare from his strings. Not that he ever does. Normally. When he began playing Song of the Silent Sun, I closed my eyes and sang, getting lost in the tune and his sturdy, comforting presence. So when the song finished and I opened my eyes, I certainly didn't expect to see him staring at me. For a long moment, we sat there watching each other, unspeakable truths thrumming between us, more palpable than the pluck or strum of his chords. Something I'd never felt before fluttered through my belly and up into my chest. Like I had a fluffy sow moth caged beneath my ribs, dusting me in its powder and lighting me up from the inside out. Pulled toward him, like I was caught in a current I had no interest in fighting against, I'd risen, edged closer. He was stone still as I pushed aside my veil and leaned close, so desperate to know what his lips felt like. If they were smooth and warm, like I'd imagined them to be. I brushed against him, feather light. It was barely a touch, but it ripped a hole in my perception of the world and bared the guts of a whole new version of existence. Bigger, brighter, happier. I wanted to stay right there forever, caught on that quiet yet clamorous threshold, my heart pounding so hard and fast I was certain my chest was cracking open. I knew it was wrong, that I was breaking 1,000 rules. But how could something so wrong feel so fucking right? He cupped my face with such tenderness, it was like he was cradling a dragon's egg, and I nuzzled his palm, found so much comfort in it that I wanted to stay right there, forever. Then he asked me what I wanted, and I told him my truth. One three-letter word that weighed too much, being promised to his kin. You. I pulled away with the key in my hand, just unlocking the door when he gripped me from behind, swung me around, ripped off my veil, and kissed me with such ravenous intention I lost myself. Found myself. It was the kiss of someone who wanted to give me everything, take nothing. Yet I gave him my whole heart, anyway. Realized it was rightfully his. That it had been for some time. I was about to drag him down to the far corner of the hutch where there's a pile of hay Slatra has no interest in, but then someone came running down the hall, requesting his help on an urgent matter. They almost caught us kissing. As it was, they blushed at the sight of me unveiled, no doubt noticing the scrap of material clutched in Khan's fist before they spun and apologized for intruding. I didn't care. I don't feel like Hadion anymore. I feel like a loom, wobbling along, being forged into something strong despite my broken bits. Perhaps I'll fly too.
Rave. Chapter 66. I wander down the twirling staircase, yawning as I push past the fall of vines and move through the jungle, following a well-worn path I've forged back into existence over the countless cycles since I came here. Time works differently in this place. It folds into itself like a parchment lark, hiding scrawled secrets I keep tucking away, and away, and away. The path opens to a small spring puddled beneath a burbling waterfall, and I smile. Dropping my bag and towel on the stone shore, I strip, taking tentative steps into the cool water with a bar of purple bogsberry soap and a piece of pumice I foraged from the loft's pebbled shore. I scrub my clothes, myself, then lather my hair and rinse it beneath the fall of water, combing some conditioning oil through the heavy length, leaving it to drip dry down my back. I wring out my clothes, drape them across a low-hanging vine, then bind a towel around my body and tuck all my things back in the mesh bag I purchased from one of Dom's market stalls. Moving through the jungle, I pause to pick handfuls of black bogsberries from clusters of wild shrubs that grow tucked at the base of trees, collecting them in a sack of threaded fiber. I forage through the underbrush for fallen gong nuts I pile in there too, as well as a copperdew melon I cradle in my hand as I make my way back to the dwelling. Humming a merry tune, I climb the staircase and empty my foraged goods into a large clay bowl, rinsing the berries, cracking the nuts, slicing the melon into juicy segments I arrange on a platter. I settle my spread on the table next to my terracotta mug of water and sit, about to bite down on a piece of melon, when my gaze flicks to the shelf, to the diary I acquired from the curly quill. I stand and move toward it, reaching out to pluck it from its resting place, tracing the moon plume embossed on the cover. My stare drifts to the old quill I dusted several Aurora cycles ago, then to the jar of ink. Shrugging, I carry all three items to the table and settle them beside my spread, cracking the diary open, brimming with the strangest urge to write. I've never felt inclined to journal before, but this place does weird, unexplainable things to me, and for the most part, I've been going with it, exploring these odd urges in this quiet place where there are no eyes, no ears, no commands. In the beginning, I called it an experiment. Now I see it a little differently. I think I'm learning how to exist without shackles and expectations, without the hurt and the crippling fear of loss that hacks my head from my heart. I think I'm learning what it means to live. Fallon would be proud. Mostly. I ink my quill, pausing to pop a Bogsberry in my mouth, the burst of tart sweetness exploding over my taste buds as I scratch my thoughts on the parchment, the words flowing easier than I expected them to. Diary entry. Name, Rave, ish. Age, wish I knew. Date, 5,165 phases after stone. Location, dwelling in the jungle. Elding Blade / Fallen Moon Piece? I've tried to leave. Creators, I've tried. But every time I've packed up my stuff and set out with the intention of catching a Molten Maw across the plains so I can snap Rex Zaros' neck, I've instead returned with new towels. Sheets. A sewing kit to repair the ruined pallet. An iron ring so I don't cry with the rain. With lengths of material and shears to craft new curtains, and then a roll of Kolkhide I used to patch up the chairs and cedars because apparently I'm crafty now. Essie would be proud. I'm just baffled. Haunted. Maybe a little crazy. Maybe a lot crazy. I'm not sure how to handle this strange part of me that seems determined to sing new life into this small, forgotten home. The same part that seems unable to dislodge from this sense of belonging I've never felt before. Not once. Here, I'm more alone than I've ever been, completely cut off from the rest of the world. Yet somehow the opposite. It's been hard to turn my back on the me that thrived within these walls, like studying a slow-moving tragedy that slugs along at such a languid pace you never reach the painful part. I'm living in the in-between, in the bubble of lust and buoyant hopes, drunk on the giddy feeling that flutters through my belly every time I see a flash of something so very him and her, Elowen and Khan. As the cycles flip by, I've come to this slow, uncomfortable realization that Khan fell in love with a distant, bygone version of me that was probably softer, kinder. A version of me that was brave enough, or perhaps stupid enough, to love. I know this is dangerous, that I've spent my life trapped and starving, and now I'm a gluttonous escapee gorging on the ancient scraps of a happiness that belonged to somebody else. Because it was somebody else. It certainly wasn't me. Call it morbid curiosity, but a pinch of me is desperate to know what pried me from this place, while every other part is certain I never want the answer to that poisonous question. Not even my lust for Rex Zaros' blood on my hands can pull me from this pocket of happiness right now. Yet somehow I left. Somehow I lost him. Lost myself. Lost a dragon who apparently loved me enough to sail me into the sky with her and calcify around me like a tombstone built for the both of us. It's hard to grapple that into a shape that doesn't make me choke. Every angle I inspect, I feel like I'm only seeing the small, rounded peak of something too big and heavy to bear. Intuition tells me I don't have the capacity to swallow all that sadness, which is why I've come to a decision. Now I just have to build up the courage to do it. To let this go. For good. But not now. I'm not done imagining yet.
Khan. Chapter 67. I charged down the hall, using the back of my arm to swipe the sweat from my eyes, plowing around a corner to see Pyrok jogging toward me, shirtless, looking like he just rolled off his pallet at the sound of the lookout's horns hailing my arrival. "You look sober-ish."
"The cycle is young," he says, falling into step beside me. "Welcome home."
"Take it Veya isn't back yet." I'd hoped that when I landed, she'd run out to greet me like she usually does. Feels weird without her dashing out with 1,000 questions on her tongue, ready to sling them at me. Feels hollow.
"No, last lark I received, she was almost at the wall, but anticipated a few stops were going to slow her down. I'm guessing she's almost at Erythia by now, maybe even on her way back."
I grunt, wanting to know nothing about these stops he speaks of.
"Why do you smell like sulfur?"
"Took Grim to Gondorak," I mutter as we charge around another corner.
"What?"
"Dropped his sorry ass off at the hatching hut so he can try and steal an egg from the great silver saber scythe." A beat of pause as the two sentries standing guard over my office stamp their spears upon the ground at the sight of me, opening the doors.
"He's going to die," Pyrok mutters. "And he didn't even wave goodbye. What the fuck is that?"
I don't bother responding. I've had a long time to work through these same emotions. And I'm now sitting somewhere close enough to acceptance that I no longer want to punch my fist through a wall or kick myself for letting him convince me to leave him there, telling me he was going to do this by himself, or not at all.
"I get it. Going to raid a nest or charm an already grown beast is a deeply personal journey for those doing it for the right reasons." Still chafes.
I charge into my office, the large space empty but for a stone desk and twin leather seats, appearing exactly as I'd left it all. Moving toward the wall of curtains at the back, I rip them wide, scouring the view of the loft beyond and filling the room with a blaze of light, illuminating the char marks all over the walls. The only embellishment this room deserves. I think back to the shelves that used to line these walls, packed full of memorabilia from Pa's reign. Think back to how good it felt watching it all burn after I stormed the stronghold, still splashed in his blood, with his head hanging from my fist. He put too much effort into this space, and not enough into being a decent Pa to Veya. To me. Now this room resembles a vacant chest cavity. And I wouldn't have it any other way. Anything more would be doing his memory a service he doesn't deserve.
"I saw Grim carrying ruined boots into his sleep suite," Pyrok muses as he lumps into the leather seat opposite my own. "Makes a fuckload more sense now."
"Yes, it does." I drop my saddlebags on the ground, scrubbing my hands over my face before I turn toward the desk.
"So what now?"
"If he makes it back to the hut, he'll send a lark for one of us to collect him," I say, lumping heavily into my seat. Catching a waft of my shirt, I frown, pulling up the collar, drawing a sniff of sweat, sulfur, and ash. Definitely need a bath, and a meal, and some fucking sleep. Preferably on something other than sand or dirt with only the shield of Rygun's wing to keep me from being mauled to death by predators. To be fair, I think he would have happily stayed north forever, basking in the heat and the vast smorgasbord of creatures that tried to skulk past him and snatch me while I slept. I'm certain he's grown.
"Collect him and his freshly hatched dragon," Pyrok says. Let's not get ahead of ourselves.
I reach into my pocket, fishing around for all the parchment larks that have been flocking me over the past 30 slumbers I've been away. It's one thing to steal an egg. Hatching it is a different story. I dump around 50 crushed larks on the table, pinching the bridge of my nose as I glare at them.
Behind on your paperwork, I see.
What do I pay you for again?
Certainly not that, he chuffs.
I lift a brow, waiting.
Genuinely curious. All I ever see him do is drink mead. To sit around and look pretty, he finally says, flashing me a smile. Roan's the helpful sibling, remember? He got the brain, I got the hair. And the cordial nature. And I'm pretty fucking good with my tongue. Got it.
His smile widens, and he crosses his ankle over his knee, playing with his bottom lip piercing, making no move to help me sort through the notes. I sigh, reaching across the table for the pile of pre-ruined parchment squares and my black quill, flattening one of the larks and skimming the note, wincing when I see the date. Poor Crove's been waiting over 20 cycles to have his huttle crab quota signed off for final approval. I ink my quill and begin scratching out an apology. Speaking of which,
is Roan back yet?
Nope. I shake my head. Might send someone to check on him, make sure he's all right.
So, are you going to ask about her?
My blood chills. That stupid organ in my chest impaling itself on a rib. No, I grind out, dipping my quill in the ink again and continuing to scribe my message.
She's still here.
I pause, eyes closing as I release another sigh. Slowly, I set my quill on the desk, lean back in my chair, cross my fucking arms, and give Pyrok my full, undivided attention. Lifting a brow, I wait for him to continue.
I've seen her at the markets.
I quirk a brow.
Oh?
He nods.
Buying shit.
I stare at him, waiting for him to continue. Which he doesn't.
Well, what kind of shit?
He rolls his eyes, like it's an outrageous question. Except it's not. Not to the organ in my chest that's far too soft for its own good. Pyrok begins ticking things off his fingers.
Leather, soap, poultice, towels. She did go to the Curly Quill and waited outside while a kid went in to pick up a bag of something for her. But I can't tell you what, because I can't see through leather. And I think she bought a sack of feathers from the local Goggin bird breeder. But it could have been grain, he shrugs. I tried to keep my distance.
I frown, my gaze dropping to the pile of crushed larks while I pick through his words. It sounds to me like she's settling in, not preparing to leave. Which makes no sense, unless she's been remembering things. Perhaps forming a new attachment to the place. My chest aches at the thought, and it's an effort not to groan as I scrub my face again, in desperate need of a bath and maybe a wall to bash my head against.
Are you attending the Great Flirt celebrations?
Pyrok asks, and I lean forward, getting to work unfolding the rest of the scrunched larks. I'll be lifting the platforms, of course.
I mean the actual festival.
I quirk a brow, sliding him half the pile. Have I ever? He still makes no move to help, instead narrowing his eyes on me.
You really think now's the right time to turn all stubborn prick?
Perfect time, actually. The last great flirt we spent together was the last time I saw her alive. I flatten another lark and slap it on the pile.
We spent the slumber together, and the following day I flew off to help rebuild a village. The next time I saw Eluin, her limp body was being carted into the sky by her mourning dragon, I growl, slamming another lark on the fucking pile. So no, the idea of inviting her to the Great Flirt celebration doesn't thrill me, nor will I apologize for my reluctance.
Maybe this time will be different.
I chuckle, low and without humor. Maybe she'll fillet my heart in a different direction. Undoubtedly, she's quite fond of filleting. Quite good at it, too.
Pyrock sighs, bashing his fist against the arm of his chair.
Look, all I know is I heard her ask a merchant if they'd seen the king around. Do with that as you will, he mutters,
then shoves to a stand and stalks toward the door. I frown. Where are you going?
To get drunk in Grimm's suite while I raid his dagger collection, he drawls, moving through the doorway. Since he's probably dead already, the asshole.
The sound of his boot steps tapers off, and I tip my head, staring at the ceiling.
Fucking fuck.
Abandoning the larks, I push up and drift toward my balcony doors, pull them wide, then step out into the sun's harsh glare, overlooking Dom and the Loth, the western point. I walk all the way to the vine-clothed balustrade, resting my elbows against it, my heart blocking my airway when I see a shape in the distance, right where the water laps at the bouldered shore. Frowning, I stalk into my office and snatch my seeing scope off the desk, then move back onto the balcony and stretch the tool, putting it to my eye and pointing it in the direction of the shape. My ribs crack at the sight. Raves stepping from stone to stone, feet bare, hair mostly piled atop her head, her cheeks and shoulders a little sun-kissed. She's dressed in the short black sleep shift she was wearing when I took her to visit Slatra, one of the thin shoulder straps falling down her arm. She doesn't bother to lift it back into place, like she hasn't even noticed, instead bending down and plucking a shell from between the stones. She inspects it from all angles before placing it in a basket hanging off her arm. I swallow as she straightens, casting her crisp, glacier eyes toward. My heart stills. Toward Rygon's hutch. Well, fuck. Guess we're on her mind. Ready for another round, Moonbeam? She tucks a loose piece of hair behind her ear, a yearning in her eyes that messes with my heartstrings. I slam the looking glass against my palm, closing it, considering the implications of ripping my own heart out and smashing it against the stone, giving her a head start. Though maybe Pyrock's right. Maybe this time will be different. Maybe it'll be worse. Either way, there's no one else I'd willingly serve my heart on a platter to. Over and over and over again. Like a hopeless, lovesick stray, begging for a treat.
Diary entry. Elowyn Nevon, age 19 phases, 5,040 phases after stone. I attended a tithe this day. Since his pa's absent, Khan sat on the bronze throne, accepting offerings, giving back to those who had little to offer in the first place. I watched from the back of the hall as he spoke with each of the folk with such raw grace and fairness, it reminded me of the way Ma and Pa used to run their kingdom, feeling a deep pang of homesickness at that thought. Pa didn't respect King Austern. He said their values didn't align, that Austern had little care for anyone who couldn't hear the elemental songs. I watched Khan offer a young, struggling family a plump sack of gold and decided Pa would have respected King Austern's eldest son. Khan saw me from across the vast space, our eyes locked, and I'm certain the world stilled. I felt so bare before him, infused with a fiery heat that had nothing to do with the ever-present burn that scalds this place. Certain my body was going to sizzle from the inside out if we did not collide, struggling to see much else through the haze of my unquenched desire. I moved behind a pole before anyone noticed, desperate to catch my breath that had suddenly fled. I know that things I desire are forbidden. I'm all out of reasons to care. For almost two phases, I've existed in this stronghold like one of the shadows. I'm done living the life I've been told to live, and not the one I want for myself.
Rave. Chapter 69. He's broad, dense, alive beneath me, his bent knees pushed between my legs, prying me open. Entirely exposed, I jerk my hips, trying to force his touch upon that coil of tender nerves. Please.
You don't have to beg for me, Moonbeam.
His words shake my bones, his fingers sweeping around my entrance, so feather light it's but a breath of touch. My body ignites, my heart a violent hammer of feisty need. I grip his Malmer, holding it close.
If you want me.
He presses his mouth to my ear, nipping gently.
I'm fucking yours.
Groaning, I slide my hand down the taut muscles of his strong arm, over his wrist, his knuckles, his fingers. I push him into me, tiding with the thrust of pleasure, thighs loosening, widening. Forever, I whimper, working him deeper. I want you forever. He makes a dense rumbling sound, his other hand gripping my jaw and turning my head to the side. I catch a glimpse of fierce ember eyes before he takes my mouth in a kiss that devastates my ability to breathe or think, prisoner to his insatiable taste, to the way he commands my lips and tongue, devouring me. My hips roll to match the deep thrust of his fingers and his all-consuming kiss, my body winding up, up. He flips us, knees my legs wider, then grips my hips and tugs, lengthening my spine. A firm hand presses between my shoulder blades before he rubs the solid head of his cock against my wet, pulsing entrance. So open, so ready. An air-shredding roar rips through my dreamscape, like snapping a book shut right at the good part. My eyes pop open, a passion-fueled moan of frustration bludgeoning up my throat, hungry and feral and laced with need. I slap my hand on my face and groan, still crushed beneath the feel of Khan's body upon mine, moving with mine, in mine. Trembling from the dream's vibrant shockwaves, I push up, beads of sweat gathered between my breasts, my nipples hard and peaked. I shake my head, threading my hands through my damp hair. It's getting worse. Well, better, actually. Substantially better. But a whole lot harder to let go of. A shadow falls upon the sleep space. Frowning, I cast my gaze up through the skyhole, seeing a flash of dark, ruddy scales. Another screeching roar slices through the din, and my heart rallies as I register what actually woke me. A dragon, flying almost close enough to whip its tail down and slash this place to shreds. I leap off the pallet and flatten myself against the floor, waiting for the booming thud of the beast's wings to ebb. When I finally risk a peek at the ceiling, my heart stills. High in the sky, almost close enough to graze the spiky bronze moon that sits above the city, a pair of saber scythes spin together, shrieking as they twist and tumble amongst a spill of aurora ribbons. Too many. Is the sky broken? And has war come to Dom? Keeping low to the floor, I reach for my small pile of clothes I've collected over the cycles, pulling my trusty black slip on and shoving it over my hips. I stuff my feet into my boots, then snatch my leather sheath on my way down the stairs. Blindly buckling it to my thigh, I dash out into the jungle to the tune of another screeching roar. Shit, I mutter, flattening myself against the stone,
heart thumping hard and fast. I secure the final buckle while searching for any sign of danger, finding nothing amiss. Though there is a faraway song lilting to the distant thud of drums that certainly doesn't sound like I'd expect war drums to sound. The beat, playful? What's going on? Dashing my hair off my face, I dart through the jungle, cutting my surroundings into surveyed segments, hunting for any irregularities. More near and distant dragon shrieks rattle the air, lusted with a sweet, spicy smell, almost like the world is a flower in full bloom. I inch free of the dense foliage, down the tide's vertical lip, and onto the loft's pebbled shore. My eyes widen, something inside me going so still, I feel like every beat of my heart is an earthquake in comparison. Terracotta rocks grind beneath my boots as I edge toward the lapping water, taking in the sky. Definitely broken. A scribble of silver aurora threads dance to their own pulsating beat. Thousands of them. Like the tap that usually lets no more than 10 of them dribble free sprung a leak. A big one. Dragons soar and spiral through the metallic ribbons of light, some on their own, some paired off with other dragons that match their spectacular motions. Frowning, I cast my gaze across the city in the distance. Almost every bouldered structure boasts a silver flag, a riot of lengthy ribbons fluttering about, tangling with each other. The esplanade is a vibrant smudge of motion, the smell of molten mead and braised meat brought to me on a whip of wind. There certainly appears to be no war happening, just some sort of celebration the likes of which I've never seen before. That and the broken sky. I pick apart an old conversation I once heard between two merchants a long while ago. They spoke of something called the Great Flirt, said the Miskuns were predicting one would bloom sometime this decade, and that they hoped there would be an influx of fertilized eggs at the spawning grounds afterward. Perhaps this is that? The dragons in the sky certainly look like they're flirting. My cheeks heat. Good for them. At least somebody's fucking in real life and not just in their dreams. Again, I look at the city, a surge of adrenaline spiking through me, making my heart pump harder, faster. Something about those silver ribbons and the drums and the dragons makes me want to run toward something for a change, to rip down the bars of my self-restraint and crack open my hungry heart, crumble it into a silt, mash it together with some moisture, then mold it into something soft again. Exactly why I should not go there. Over the other side of that heavily ruined terracotta fence, reality prowls like a skulking beast ready to hunt, to kill. I turn my back on the city, charging toward the jungle, but something in my peripheral makes me pause. I look at the tree where I found the carving, a black woven basket now hanging on a short, knobbly branch. My heart stills, breath catches. Whoever left it there knows I'm here, despite the fact that I've been discreet. Most importantly, they know there's no damn hushling living over this side of the fence. The riddle's not exactly hard to untangle. I move toward the tree, eyeing the basket like the ember it is, knowing one purposeful breath blown upon its surface will lead it to ignite, to burn. Swallowing the lump of trepidation rising in my throat, I take the basket's weight in my hand and lift it from the branch, settling it on the ground. I rip back the cloth draped over the contents, entirely expecting the motion to rip off a scab in some way or another. "Creators," I mutter, studying the delicate, ethereal mask tucked amongst a nest of silver silk. An elaborate craft of argent wire and flat, pearly discs that glimmer in the sun's blaze. Ribbons are attached to the sides, perhaps meant to bind it around the back of my head. I set it aside and lift the puddle of silken fabric, revealing a gown unlike anything I've ever seen. All strips of draped material clamped in places with diamond brooches. Beneath the garment, I find a pair of crystal-encrusted slippers to match, as well as a corked bottle of sun-shielding poultice. The same sort I purchased from a store many slumbers ago when I realized bathing naked in the spring was a recipe for chapped skin and fevered sleep. The final thing in the basket is an elaborate fold of parchment. I side-eye like it's going to leap out and bite me. Cutting another glance toward the city, I pull out the note and unpleat the folds. Khan's Malmer tumbles into my lap, and my heart drops into my belly. For a long moment, I stare at the beautiful pendant before finally taking in the note. Dance with me? My eyes squeeze shut as I pluck the Malmer from my lap and hold it tight, a quiet trepidation thrumming through me. There's a weight to the note that's threaded between those three small words. A weight in the mask. The gown. This Malmer, which speaks of an us that existed long ago. I think he's asking me to pretend. To let down my walls and open my heart to him for this special occasion. I draw my lungs full of sweet, smoky air and cast my stare across the city. A certainty settling within me. An energy ripe to pop. To deflate. This is it. The pin that's finally going to burst the bubble of imagination I've lost myself in. Found myself in, if I'm honest with myself. Not that it changes anything. But what a spectacular way to go out. A goodbye fit for everything we used to be. The quiet acknowledgement I now see that I owe us. Him. Before I erase it all.
Diary entry. Elowin Navan. Age 19 phases. 5,040 phases after stone. This Aurora Fall, there was no carving, no meal, just a half-folded parchment lark and a strange rusted key. I folded the final activation line and the lark took flight, soaring down the stairs that led to Slatra's hutch, then taking to the back where it flapped down a shadowed tunnel I hadn't noticed before. I followed it for a long way, the key opening a different door that shot out on the pebbled shore that cradles the glistening turquoise loft that was ruffled by an approaching storm. That poor lark. It was getting too soggy, struggling to maintain flight. So I cupped it in my hands, cradling the frantic thing like a caged sow moth. I tried to discern its desired direction based on the way it nudged against my fingers, weaving a crooked, confusing path through the jungle. I began to get nervous, wondering if it was an ambush, if someone wanted to slaughter me to steal the ether stone, thinking it some priceless treasure and not the soul-sapping curse it is. But then I came to a dwelling carved into the cliff, a home so hidden away from the world that I suspect it would be impossible for anyone else to find. Khan was inside, sitting at a stone table he'd set for us, the air flush with the smell of kolk and kennet root stew. He told me this place was his gift to me, but that he didn't have to come with it. That one word from me and he'd step out into the jungle and never return. I was upon him before the sentence fully left his lips. He's fire and brimstone. I'm shattered ice. Our collision is steam and destruction, destined to dissipate. But I'll gladly burn beneath him until the world comes crumbling down.
Rave. Chapter 71. There's a familiar male leaning against the stone wall with his back to me,
a blaze of rebellious locks dashed around his shoulders. "You look like you were dragged backward through a bush," I say, striding toward Pyrok, the gifted mask upon my face like an elegant shield. He spins, flashing me a teeth-glinting smile.
"All part of my charm. Females love it. They tug on it like reins."
"This one won't be." His eyes widen.
"Fucking hope not. I quite like my head. And my cock. And living."
Clearing my throat, I pretend I don't know exactly what he means, taking in the red leather tunic cut to emphasize his broad chest. The top half of his face is hidden behind a mask fashioned from the orange and red down feathers of a molten maw, and he's even replaced his piercings with ruddy ones to match.
"So,
guessing you're my escort?"
"Strictly platonic."
"If you had more platonic relationships, perhaps your hair wouldn't look like a bird's nest." He smiles, digging his fingers into a small sack of something lumped in his hand.
"Nice to see the hushling didn't suck out your brain through your nostrils."
"Shocking, I know." I pause before the wall and set my slippers on the ground so I can readjust the material draped across my bust, making sure it's keeping me well contained. "Who finger-painted the warnings on the wall?"
"Veya."
My brows bump up, hands stilling.
"Khan lost it after you passed,"
he says with a shrug.
"She knew he'd have regrets if the place fell into complete disarray."
"Oh," I murmur, stashing that prickly parcel beneath my icy lake with the speed of a lightning strike. "So you knew me before?"
"Little bit. It was a long fucking time ago."
"You don't remember much?"
"Quite the opposite,"
he counters, winking at me.
"My memory's the sharpest weapon in my sparse armory."
"Right. Good for you." Mine, as it turns out, is quite shit. Not that I'm complaining. He tosses a small red thing into the air and catches it with his mouth, crunching through it.